Welcome to the inaugural RUF SCAD podcast. I'm Martin, the campus minister with RUF. Today we've got Sam Gipple. Sam, thanks for being here.
How's it going?
Good. Glad to have you. So one of the things you might notice quickly about Sam is we have very different accents.
Yeah. No, that's it's pretty strong.
Yeah. So mine or yours? Whose accent's strong?
Obviously, mine is the neutral accent.
There it is, right?
There it is.
So tell us what the neutral accent is.
England, Sam. England. So I'm from England. And my dad is American, my mom is English, but no matter where I go, someone thinks I'm from somewhere else, because if I'm over here, they think I'm British. Back home, they think I'm American. It's pretty sad.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So maybe the obvious question then is, from England, how did you end up at SCAD in Savannah, Georgia, of all places?
Right, so since I was 11, I wanted to direct films. Which is ridiculous, but for some reason I thought that would be a good idea. And then I started around, I was 16, started taking some acting classes because I thought it would help my directing. And then I really started liking acting, which eventually evolved into me wanting to double major. And you can't double major in the UK. And I didn't think the film programs were that great there either. And so the only place in the US actually could do double majors was SCAD. Weirdly enough, and that ended up honestly just being the choice I went with, and I have family in the US, so it wasn't too far a stretch.
Yeah, makes sense. Kind of a nice pragmatic answer.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can pinpoint 11 years old I wanted to be a director, was there a pivotal moment where you kind of, was it a movie, like was it something that you saw, like, all right, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, it definitely was. It was watching Lincoln when I was 11. I went to the cinema with my dad, and I'd never really heard much of Abraham Lincoln, and I went there, and I don't know, it's a combination of Steven Spielberg and the character of Abraham Lincoln, it just stuck with me, and I was like, that's a great movie. Some people think it's really slow. A lot of people think it's really slow, and they get really bored watching it, but for whatever reason, at 11 years old, I thought that was like the best movie I've ever seen in my life. I don't know, something's wrong with me, but like since then, I was like, okay, I've got to make another movie like that about someone who I think is as amazing or says something as powerful as how it made me feel. And yeah, trying to aim for something, hopefully, which bores less people, but makes them feel like
that's
I felt
goal.
yeah, but something that like they'll feel like how I felt when I left the movie, what they felt when they left the movie, I guess, you know.
All right, so help me out with this one, because Lincoln is the movie that I put in the category of,
yeah,
I appreciate it more than I enjoyed it. We had very theatrical, different theatrical experiences. So for you, what did Lincoln do? Where it was like, this just connected with me. Do you remember at 11 years old?
Yeah, it's really weird. I think, honestly, ever since I was a kid growing up in England, I wanted to be American, for one. And like, I hated it. I was British. Hated it. Like, I just thought it was the most lame country. It rains all the time. People are boring and pale and old. And I watched Lincoln about this wonderful land of glorious justice, you know, the end of slavery. And actually what I thought was a really well-directed movie by Spielberg. And I, as a kid, you know, Spielberg's like the most kind of archetypal, like the director. There is no more of like a stereotypical director than Spielberg. But for whatever reason, I caught on to it. And so, yeah, it's just a combination of like the character of Lincoln, and I got a book about Abraham Lincoln, and I just started reading all the weird notations about all the letters actually he sent when he was younger and got older, and I don't know, I really like that dude, obviously.
So in some ways, maybe like it was greater than just the sum of its parts. There was truly a theatrical experience that like seems like it really resonated.
Yeah, and to be honest, I tried to watch it again the other day, and I think I've watched it like 50 times easily. Easily. I'm not even kidding. I think it's been that many times. And I got bored after a while. Probably it took me 50 times to get bored. But
is that only because you've seen it so many times now, or because you actually think it's a boring movie now?
I don't want to say
that's
it.
A hard question.
I don't want to make me say that.
Movie. Yeah, yeah.
I think it was a great movie. Would I say it's the best movie I've ever watched? No. Would I say that it's the most exciting movie I've ever watched? No. But I don't know. It put me on the path, I guess.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a few years then. So 5 years, it sounds like, kind of all set on directing, and then acting kind of started to surface. How'd that happen?
Yeah, so In England, we have these things called A-levels, which is when you go to, I'm just keep saying words people don't know, sixth form. We go to sixth form, and that's kind of like after middle school, and you go into kind of, you know, we have like two senior years, which is what we call sixth form, and that makes that up. And we're allowed to choose three classes to take, and one of them was drama. And my mom is an actress, or was an actress, and she was actress in, you know, English stage in London, all that kind of stuff. And she kind of shoved me and said, you should take some acting classes. And I didn't want to. I'm not, you know, I'm not that guy. I don't really like, you know, I wouldn't say I'm not like an introvert, but neither am I, but I call myself an extrovert either. You know, I'm not that, I don't get energy from being around people in a huge way. And probably the opposite actually. So maybe I'm an introvert, but it just seemed like the opposite kind of character to me. But whatever, I took it. I took some classes in acting because I thought it would help with my directing. And weirdly, I was like part of this drama department that was literally called The Shed. It was this really dingy shed, you know, at the back of this boys' school with a South African teacher who would yell at us in a weird accent and throw books at us when we didn't. Genuinely, she would throw books at us and sneak in her three sausage dogs into class all the time. And she just told us to keep our mouths shut or she gets fired. But equally, she like gave me a lead part really quickly, which isn't hard with a group of four people. But she was cool about it, though. She thought I was pretty good. And I don't know. The kind of plays that we did were just so deeply painful, in essence. And so it's like really deep drama and like dealing with really tough issues, which I won't go into all now, obviously, but there was something, I liked how gritty it was. I liked being able to delve into all those emotions, which I wasn't allowed to do otherwise. There was just something weirdly attractive and expressive about it. So I kind of just got hooked, which was annoying because then I had to somehow double major. But obviously it's a good thing.
So it sounds like that was kind of the inverse of directing. With directing, yeah. It was like I saw it and I was intrigued, so I went to go try it. With acting, is like
it literally snuck up on me, right. And said, "Guess what? Yeah. You're gonna go act." I'm like, "Dang it, you got me!"
Yeah, I didn't even get a say so in it.
I really didn't. Like, yeah. I can't afford it for. I was like, "I'm not an actor. Those people are weird." I mean, they are. You know,
you said it, not me. Not the actor.
I think everyone else says it too.
All right. So then the obvious question is. When you think about film and your place in it, do you think of yourself primarily as a director who acts or an actor who directs, or is that an unfair question?
Yeah, I don't think it's an unfair question because like everybody asked me that question. Like I went to an audition the other day and someone was like, saw my resume and it said directing and acting. And he's like, all right, well, what are you? Are you an actor or are you a director? And I awkwardly in front of like everybody was kind of like, I do both. And like try to sell to them that I equally care about both things, but I really do. Like it's kind of like one without the other is now I'd get so frustrated and upset. Like I need the experiential thing of performing, and I need the signature thing of kind of telling a story. And those are completely two different parts of me that both kind of need to be fulfilled. And neither of them can you really do both at the same time unless you're acting and directing, which again, you're still acting and directing. Those are two separate things. So I don't know. I think weirdly for my personality, it's kind of worked out. Like I would be miserable if I only acted and I'd be miserable if I only directed. So I kind of like to, my aim is to act, get into acting, which will hopefully lead to directing. And then I'll just keep going back and forth the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Which is completely unrealistic, but that's my strange plan.
Yeah. You know, this is probably not a shocking thing to say. One of the things that we quickly discover about the film world is there's not a lot of Christians, at least with prominent voices, or maybe outside of kind of the Christian bubble of things. And one of the things that we try to cultivate within RUF and SCED, and you've been around for a number of years and have seen this, is thinking about what it actually looks like to be a Christian participating in this world of art, especially something like film. And TV and acting and directing. So for you, like, asking a question of Christian experience, it's a pretty big question, but if we were to consolidate that down into maybe a couple minutes, like, how'd you become a Christian? Is that a 2-minute answer? Is it a 3-minute answer?
I'll get it down to 2 minutes.
Yeah, there we go.
So I grew up in a family that was Christian. And So much so that when I was like at this, you know, kind of boarding school kind of thing, I would tell everybody quite blindly all the things that I've learned, you know, or like Noah's Ark's been found and all these things that I've heard on, you know, being passed around in the house that I didn't really know if like my parents are joking about it so much or if it was true, but I kind of, I believed it all to be true. And so I went for a few years of kind of, because of that, I was like, I don't want to be the ignorant Christian walking around who doesn't actually think about it. So then I don't know, I went away and really thought about it. I don't think I ever left the faith at all. I think I was always like, I believe in God, God's in my heart. And so I think God's always been in my heart when I was a kid. But I think I developed a healthy questioning, which actually ended up kind of strengthening my faith and when, you know, became a youth leader at church and just kept involved in the church. And, you know, I think the discussions about faith kind of... So I guess the answer to that question is yes, I was technically always a Christian, but there were definitely some pivotal moments in which I went on some self-exploration and kind of came back to it like, yes, I should be continue to be a Christian. If that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I suspect, you know, that's probably manifested itself in some ways in the art that you've done. Just mm-hmm. in some ways, if that's part of your story, it's probably inescapable that those themes at least make some appearance. So what's that been like as a creative and kind of taking the things that's true of your experience? Let's talk about your art a little bit, in other words. Yeah, how have those things played together? What are some things within the kind of the Christian framework that have sort of found places in your artwork?
Well, I think, you know, when I was a kid, when I was like, oh, I'm going to make some God movies or I'll make, you know, and then I watched God's Not Dead. And I was like, that's a bad idea. Because I think with a lot of movies back then, it's not saying those movies are bad. There are great reasons. There are so many great Christian movies that I actually do think are good movies. They're solid movies. They're well done. But I just kind of feel like not sure what the good does, what that does for an atheist. So someone who walks into it and sees, you know, the presentation of scenes of like God doing these miracles. I'm like, well, it's a movie. Nothing in a movie makes you believe. It's a movie. It's all fake. And I think a lot of Christian movies kind of present a very, it doesn't create a discussion and more just kind of tells you what's happening without like, I don't know. I'm not sure if this makes any sense. It's just, there isn't enough depth, frankly, to it.
Yeah.
To consolidate all of that in terms of faith and disbelief and actually understanding disbelief and why people don't believe. And
yeah, for sure.
So I guess with films, I like to, like my ideal is to create films that ultimately point to God, but not in the most direct way. It's more of like a Christian and a non-Christian could watch this movie and they both take something really grand away from it. And I hope through the beauty of that, it would point them to God. And it changes from movie to movie, like script to script, what that means. Sometimes it's more directive, like I prayed something and I, you know, something happened, which you could interpret to be of God. And other times it's just showing the values of God within that film. So that's definitely a challenge. I'm not sure I would do it with every film, but it is something I try and incorporate where I can. And then with acting, I remember when I started acting, I refused to say any swear words. So that's how that incorporated in my acting classes. And my South African teacher was like, what are you doing? And she kind of slapped me and said, I'm a Christian too. Stop swearing. And that's not, guys, I'm not saying that's a good idea. Don't swear. And I'm not going to do it on this podcast. And it's more of just like in the script is that, would you say that's me as a Christian actually cussing, which is a debate to have, which I'm not going to have right now. But I guess I've thought about it. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the word used, depth, is such a helpful one. I mean, one of the things that I feel like we've noticed with Christians in art is like, in some ways, what's portrayed in a film isn't actually accurate of our experience, even as Christians.
Yeah.
And even we look at like the narrative frameworks of the Bible is like, there's complexity to the characters that go through their experiences of struggling and suffering. Like we think about somebody like Job, it's like there's depth to that story and it doesn't tie up in a nice, neat bow at the end.
It leaves you with lots of questions and like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. So what are some of those things, like what are maybe some themes that you try to bring out just in the way that you approach your films? that maybe aren't as prominent when we kind of survey the landscape of how Christians normally represent art?
Well, I think, I'm just thinking about this. This is just a film I shot last year. It was about this guy whose son was killed, and he's trying to deal with that grief. And we have this scene where he's essentially screaming at God, saying, how could he take him away from me? And I won't just completely, in case one any of you decide if we watch it, which I doubt, but that's okay. Just for the sake of that, I'm not going to say exactly what happened, but there is obviously a desire for him to say, okay, God, why don't you just bring him back to me? And I think that's not saying that doesn't happen in the Christian experience. I think there are moments that God can intervene and things can happen. Things happen. Prayer does things. Does that mean that person will wake up from the dead? I'm not going to say yes or no. God's God. But equally, I don't think we should be selling Christians this idea that this will happen. Watch this movie about this guy being raised up from the dead. That's realistic. Go to church. God's God. He works in his own way. You cannot sell people what God will do because we're not in charge of that. And so it's better. And so in my film, I'm trying to present actually the more a little bit disheartening, but also kind of just more to the bone of just, okay, his son didn't get raised from the dead. That doesn't happen. But he sees the value in what has happened, and for whatever value that is, and he sees God still within what you actually mentioned in your sermon yesterday, the wilderness. Seeing God in the wilderness in spite of not seeing, rainbows come out of heaven and an angel give him back to you, So I think it's just presenting people with a God that is very much there, but not selling them this cheap version of it that isn't authentic, I guess.
Yeah. It's like that kind of verges on propaganda almost. You mentioned that earlier. What we don't want to do is use art as this catalyst whereby we try to convince somebody that something's true. Because, does that ever even work anyway?
You can.
Yeah. And it's also disingenuous to the experience of life. If we talk amongst other Christians, it's like, man, if we feel like we've got it all figured out, we're probably doing something wrong. That's not the expectation. So a genuinely Christian film, if we want to use that category, seems like it should do justice to that experience of questioning. Not even having the answer at the end in some ways.
Yeah, just to add, just really quickly, I just think it's the job is, for me, is like, you got to present everything. And that includes whatever faults you can see with Christianity. If you can show it in a film, show it. I don't think you should hide away from that. And for me, I'm okay, actually, because I've thought about it. And this is the conclusion I came to, that Christ is real. He died for me. But for an atheist watching, if you show an atheist, I remember I surprised my atheist friend sometimes because I'll say outright, yeah, I don't get this. This is difficult for me. I have trouble with my faith sometimes. And I just kind of say it outright. So I think it's better with a film to present all these issues as what they are. They are issues. That creates discussion. And so when an atheist sees these things and sees that not everything's just happy as Daisy and, happy as Larry and everything's okay, they'll go, okay, this is actually thinking about my side of it. This is presenting the doubts and issues plainly rather than giving them a over-glorified version.
Yeah. So you mentioned the film you worked on last year. Are you working on anything right now?
Yeah, I'm working on this film called Spare Strings. It's essentially about this guy who lost his memory. And again, I'm not trying to present it. It's like, ooh, we got his memory back. Congrats. He actually goes, he freaks out about his life so much, he ends up on the street. And because he just can't handle the idea of people telling him what his life was, he can't remember any of it. So he'd rather go explore and find out what's actually the world is without being told what it is about truths about himself, so he doesn't know. So it's more of just kind of a self-discovery film without necessarily ending with this incredible miraculous. I guess I've kind of leaned into that recently, just, a good ending doesn't have to be necessarily miraculous. It can just be, things work out well, and they continue. Life continues.
Yeah.
They get stronger. They get better. They improve. They learn to carry on. And amazing good things can come, you know, without it being, congratulations, you're healed. Life's perfect now. Good luck.
Yeah. So where did the inspiration for the film come from?
Well, I'm a guitarist. So actually, I forgot to mention this part. So Spare Strings, it's about, in the end, he actually finds a guitar in a dumpster, and essentially he realizes that he can make a little bit of money on the street if he just has a guitar in his hand and tries to play. And that alone will get, you know, some change will end up in his pocket just from more people walking by and hearing him. The rest I'm working on. But I came up with it from, essentially, I don't know. I originally had an idea of this guy who's walking around and actually just, you know, like, he is homeless and he just finds a guitar and that's how he stays alive. That is his form of income. That's how he buys, you know, whatever snacks he can, food and water. But yeah, so it's, I wanted to find a way to incorporate guitar into a film, and that kind of became that.
Yeah. So influences, who would you say are some of your big ones? Either acting or directorial, who comes to mind?
The thing is, every time anyone asks a question like this, it always ends up incredibly pretentious, especially with film majors. Any film major is scared. You sound pretentious. There's no getting away from it. But I'll go for it anyway. Obviously, I mentioned Lincoln, so I'll leave that one aside. You already know that. Not because I want to be president. Just because I thought his letters were cool, and he seemed like an honest guy and did some good stuff. Got to really think about it. So you just said, who's some people that kind of like inspire you? Inspirations. I got to say, Daniel Day-Lewis, love his stuff. Mainly because he just shows up on set. He does his job. He doesn't go to the red carpets, really. He doesn't try and be a celebrity. I mean, in fact, did you know that, like, right now he makes shoes now.
There's something beautiful about that degree of just, like...
Yeah.
You mentioned that it's going to be pretentious to say that.
Yeah.
That's like the antithesis of being pretentious.
Yeah.
I'm just going to show up and be faithful and do my job.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I like it, because he doesn't, I get kind of bored of seeing, you know, these actors I think are great, then talk about how great they are.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. He doesn't. He's just like, yep, that's my job. I'm going to go now. And he leaves. And he goes home and he's quit acting and now he's making shoes for who knows who.
So is he done acting?
He's done. He quit. Yeah. Wow. And now he's making shoes in Ireland. And he's living his life. He's happy. He's just doing his thing. And he made some incredible work and he doesn't need it anymore.
Do you think he's as good a shoemaker as a actor?
Probably better. I have no idea.
Some good shoes.
I'm pretty sure he learned how to make shoes because he was doing... Because he's such a method actor. I'm sure he was like preparing for... what was it? That was that film. Oh, I can't remember that film. Do you remember the last film he was in?
This is supposed to be your area of expertise.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Terrible. Anyway, I think for the last film he did, he had to learn how to sew and make lots of stuff. And
well, I
think
that story kind of checks out then, I guess.
I think that's where he learned.
Yeah.
He's kind of pretty method in that. So I like Daniel Day-Lewis.
What about directorial?
Yeah.
Directorial influences? Anybody specific come to mind? Or even other films?
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, it was Spielberg. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of... I don't know. Started to be a bit more pretentious about it and think about other people.
Maybe the most pretentious answer you could give.
I don't want
to
do that.
Is just to not give an answer. You influence yourself.
This, you know, Wes Anderson's great, of course. Obviously, yeah. Wes Anderson. It wouldn't do his style though. That's special to him. So two favorite directors. I like Clint Eastwood a lot, partly because he's just a grumbling guy who ends up on set, barely talks to the actors and then leaves. And he's such a cool dude.
Is that appealing to your British sensibilities?
A little bit. I definitely talk to people more than he does, but like, I don't know. Again, this other guy, he's just good at his job and then tells everybody to go away. And I don't know. That sounds horrible. I don't mean it quite that way, but you know what I mean? And then I do have to say Nolan, not because he has the most intellectual films, but just because he looks cool. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's something to that.
Yeah.
If we can't appreciate that, then we are pretentious. Let's
exactly.
be honest.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the movie that was supposed to save the film industry over the summer,
right? Tenet.
What did you think about it?
Amazing and terrible. No, I think that is, though, kind of simultaneously how I felt. First of all, you could barely hear anything.
Yeah. All right, I didn't know if that was just me.
No, I think that was everybody. Like, okay. I could not hear the dialogue. Like, you probably know Morgan. I'll just throw her in here. She makes fun of me all the time. Well, I make fun of her because she always listens with subtitles to everything. And it drives me crazy. I hate seeing subtitles on any film. It drives me crazy. Not every film, but like foreign films is fine. But if you're watching a film and you can hear the dialogue, I don't know why you'd add subtitles to it. But that was one film I thought we needed subtitles. Tenet was. Like, I really could not hear what was happening.
Which wasn't helped by the fact that there were a lot of masks.
Yeah.
Being worn in the movie, yeah.
Yeah.
So you said terrible and amazing at the same time. Is that the
No. Okay. Look, I was being
We'll introduce some introduce some depth into the conversation.
Yeah. It's like it was visually amazing.
Yeah.
Like the concept of reversing everything at the same time as forward times happening. Brilliant. And like some like the reverse explosions like hitting people who were going in the correct way in time was insane. Mm-hmm. Like, visually, I've never seen anything quite like it. Like, it was... You have to be so intelligent to come up with that. The guy's a genius. But, at the same time, it's like, as a story thing, I didn't really know... I don't think anybody really knew what was happening, to a large extent.
They even sort of self-reference that.
Yeah, I mean...
Where's the line? Like, somebody outright just says, just don't think about it.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a bit insane.
The classic Nolan critique is his movies are essentially all brains and no heart, which I typically find to be a little bit uncharitable. Tend to disagree with most of those, but I found myself wondering if that actually was true.
I think it was actually an amazing film. It was kind of ruined just by like you're trying to understand what's happening, but then you can't even hear what they're saying. So it's like, it's a combination of those two things. It just makes it really difficult. But I thought, incredibly well done. Like, it's on my list of movies that I really like, you know. I think it's great. Visually awesome, but no, story's a bit lacking.
Yeah. Well, because normally the thing that saves Nolan films is even though they are intelligent films, there's a lot of complexity with the characters. You know, you think about The Prestige or even The Dark Knight or kind of some of the classic Nolan ones. There's a lot of dynamics at work within the characters. And I don't know, they did feel a little flat in this one. And it's probably because there was so much going on.
I didn't care about anybody. That's the thing. Yeah. I really didn't. Like, I was watching it, and I was like, I really don't care what happens. Well, I kind of do, but not much.
Right.
I mean, even the main protagonists, there's no much depth, not much depth to them.
Mm-hmm.
It could be replaced with another character, and I probably wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
So
where does it rank in the echelon of Nolan films for you as a self-proclaimed Nolan
fan? My favorite one's definitely Interstellar. Just visually, probably the reason for that. Mm-hmm. And the music. The music's just insane. I love... music is such a big thing for me with films. And the way those two things are incorporated in Interstellar is just incredible. So it, probably Interstellar, Inception. Dunkirk's pretty low for me, to be honest.
Man, hot take.
Yeah.
Everyone loved Dunkirk.
It's just weird. Yeah. I mean, it was good. I'm not saying it was just weird. That makes me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. I didn't get it. But yeah, I know. That's not my favorite. But I think it'd probably be third. Tenet would.
Okay. It's not bad. Higher than I would have thought.
Yeah. I don't know why. I think it's just visually. Like, yeah. I have a bad propensity to, like, I'll watch a movie sometimes and I literally will zone out what they're saying. I don't know. But, like, sometimes, which is really bad, that shows I'm a terrible person to actually give any of my thoughts on films. just shot myself in the foot. But it's just, like, I end up watching what's happening, the rhythm of what's happening, and, like, visually and the music and everything. And I don't know, I find that almost more interesting than knowing all the informational things sometimes.
Yeah.
So,
Tenet, all right movie. Saved the movie industry, we'll put it that way.
Kinda.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, Sam, appreciate it. It was fun. Thanks for joining. Just in case anybody is wondering Sam's claims of his love for America, he's currently wearing a hat
with
an American flag on it. So he was telling the truth all along.
Do I have... No, no. I thought I was wearing a British flag under this, but I don't do that.
You can love both. Sam, thanks for joining us. Thanks. Until next time.